The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Shattering confession from Keith Owens, who, according to authorities, sabotaged a competitor's car with a fishing hook and gear tie.
Well, I guess that's that.
Yeah,
karma's like some kind of consequence.
I agree. Karma is like a consequence.
What's up, all you sabotagers, okay, saboteurs, and probably some Mario Carters out there too, I bet. Welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Penelope Pitstop.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Murder Magnets, a podcast dedicated to the Peacock original show, Poker Face.
In this episode, we're covering Poker Face Season 1, Episode 7, The Future of the Sport.
This episode is directed by Ian B. McDonald, with the story by Joe Lawson and C.S. Fisher, and teleplay by Joe Lawson.
You may have noticed Jade's voice sounds different, and that's because Jade's out this week. She's doing her play. She will be back next time. I know she hates to miss any of this. She would not have had it this way, but she'll be back. And in the meantime, we got Steve filling in. Welcome, Steve Brown.
Thank you. Thank you.
Glad to have you here.
I'm very excited. I haven't met Steve before this. So
that's right.
Awesome.
I was trying to think if we'd ever podcasted before.
I
or
did
met
not realize that, or I would have introduced you. Sorry.
Yeah, that's all right.
That's okay. There's a lot of people who like already know me. So
yeah.
For our audience, our listeners, we've been plugging it. We've been saying it's a live Steve. So they all know you're live Steve.
I almost sent a call in saying, hey, no live Steve, because you're gonna have Steve live.
Yeah. Well, before we get into the episode, I'm just curious, since this is the first time we're having you on, how you're liking the show. I mean, we have gotten your feedback, so I can tell you've been digging it, but just to hear you talk about it a little bit on the spot here. And I also wonder if it's different than you thought, than you expected it to be.
Yeah, I'm loving it, really. And it is completely different. Like when I heard the description of it, I thought she was going to be like a cop, mm-hmm. like a detective or something like that. I didn't realize it was going to be this kind of kung fu type, traveling from place to place and solving murders and then leaving town. But I'm digging it, man. I really am.
That's cool. Yeah, it's fun, huh? Like a throwback. I like that it's kind of a throwback, but it's so clever. It's really, I think it's getting a lot of good buzz too. They've been marketing the hell out of it. I see ads everywhere.
The guest stars are just like a giant A-list. So, you know, they've been milking the names. Why not?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Drawing an audience with the names.
For sure. And also, before we get into this week's episode, I want to thank you guys who are listening. It's been great having you aboard with us, and we totally appreciate you guys all the time. And I also want to let you know that because The Mandalorian's coming up March 1st, and I'm going to be busy with that, this could be my last episode. I don't know for sure. I'm actually super tempted to do the next one because it's directed and co-written by Natasha Lyonne. And also, I've been hearing buzz that there's some controversy around it and that it's going to blow us away. So Ooh. I'm like, oh, man. Even if I'm not on, I'll definitely leave in some feedback. But this might be the last time I'm podcasting about Poker Face. So I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank you guys. And it's been really, really fun to talk about. So much to dig into.
We'll miss you, Jason.
And we'll be podcasting about a ton of other stuff.
Yeah, Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, that's right. That's right around the corner, too. So this week, it's Poker Face Season 1, Episode 7, The Future of the Sport. And what's it about, Penny?
All right. Stock car racing third generation legacy Keith Owens is losing his flow, and along with it, the championship against up-and-comer Davis McDowell. Their feud escalates from trash talk to punches thrown to vandalism and on to sabotage. Meanwhile, Charlie is working at a nearby arcade and go-kart restaurant called Camelot Karts, that's with K's, with Davis's mother Jean, and learning about stock car racing. Keith's daughter Katie shows up and challenges Davis to a go-kart race, saying she can beat him on any track, anywhere. She wins three times in a row, hurting Davis's ego and prompting him to vandalize the Owens's yard and mailbox on camera for his social media fans. Keith raids his fishing tackle and his tools and makes a phony call to Davis's tow company, breaks into his garage, and sabotages Davis's car with a fish hook. The next day at practice, Davis's car speeds into a concrete barricade and bursts into flames. Surprisingly, it turns out Katie is the one in the burning car, and Keith, full of guilt, confesses to the sabotage. Charlie starts to get involved after the crash when she detects a lie from Davis about why Katie crashed, and in her usual style, confronts suspects and puts herself in danger to figure out the truth. Davis knew about the sabotage and set Katie up to get hurt, even tampering with the seatbelts to make her injuries worse. Charlie leaves town, but before she does, she messes with Davis's head, warning him that Katie is coming for him.
I think he was trying to kill her.
Davis?
Don't you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like when he chased her in the tow truck? Yeah, definitely.
No.
Definitely.
Trying to kill Katie.
Yeah. No, for sure, both. I think both. Yeah. I think he didn't really care.
Yeah. I mean, he said, I would kill for what I get on this track, and then he was about to kill Charlie, and I think he was bummed that she survived it.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get into our moments to die for. Steve, guest of honor?
Sure. The first one, I really have two, but the main one that I had was, I love how each time, and I think you guys have talked about this before, is trying to figure out where is Charlie going to figure into the show. You know, and when the tow truck dispatcher came on and the subtitles just said woman, I was like, oh, she's going to be the tow truck dispatcher, but she wasn't. So I like that they had her, they subverted my expectation there. Just the fact that she's working at this arcade go-kart kind of thing. Because I remember those places when I was a kid, and particularly, I don't know if she's in California or not, but that's what it felt like to me. It didn't feel like the South. It felt like Southern California, dry desert, somewhere like that.
They're in Hudson Valley, New York, north of New York City.
Oh, okay.
Ooh,
I found a whole article about the locations. Yeah.
Well, is that the filming location and also the
in-story location?
In-story?
I don't think they ever give an in-story location, and the use of Peachtree made me think that it might be meant to be Georgia.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just know that the real shooting location, a lot of the locations actually are in Hudson Valley.
Why did you think South, Steve?
Oh, because that's big NASCAR country.
Oh, I see. Okay.
That's, got it. You know, you would see these little dirt tracks and stuff, but.
Sure. They're everywhere, though. They're here in California, too. Yeah, they are.
Yeah, I guess.
I can take my Tesla to a track if I want. I won't, because that would be dumb. I would have no idea what to do. So go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm interrupting you.
I know that was it. This hook that the show has given us of every week trying to figure out where is Charlie going to figure into it.
Yeah.
That for me. And I had another one, but I'll share it in notes.
I thought she was going to be in the pit crew. So it subverted my expectations that she ends up working at this go-kart arcade that the main racer's mom works at. That's pretty good.
Right.
Why don't you tell your other one? Go ahead.
My other one was, because I just finished watching it for the third time, was that it's a beautiful scene. I hate to say beautiful. When she confronts Davis at the track and returns the pitcher to him and gives him the pitcher and just calls him a monster. Because she realizes how deeply disturbing it is that he was trying to kill Katie, basically. Like, he found the sabotage in his car, and instead of just undoing it, he set up this whole plan in motion to kill Katie. So that was the other moment for me that I was just like, Natasha Lyonne played it so well, especially when he says, I'm the GD future of the sport, and she's like, bullshit. You know,
that was a great line.
That was so good, and that's really the crux of it. Because if you think that he didn't, like, this might be an episode where people are like, well, the guy didn't get his comeuppance. He didn't get arrested, but really he just lost everything that he cares about. I mean, still, you may, I still kind of think he deserves more justice than that, but, he did lose everything that he cared about, I think.
Well,
he's about to, anyway.
The car is at the CSI place. They might figure out the sabotage right. of the seatbelt, you know, and then, cause yeah. I mean, basically Keith confessed to attempted murder, or maybe he said he wasn't trying to hurt anyone, but someone did get hurt. So he's in jail for something. And if they figure out the seatbelt thing, you know,
yeah.
Yeah. What's yours, Penny?
My moment to die for is when Charlie goes to confront Keith to keep Davis and Randy from going over and putting him in a wheelchair. And she gets him talking about how Katie is special. And he says, she has the gift, like her grandfather, my father, I never had it. And then she, you know, sort of accuses Keith, and he denies having touched the car. And Charlie, for once, doesn't call bullshit right then and there.
Yeah,
we can see it in her yeah. eyes.
Good job restraining yourself there.
She retreats, and Donna comes in, Keith's wife, and Donna says bullshit.
Yeah.
And it was like, he yeah. still got called on his bullshit. Like, awesome.
Because she goes, what's wrong? And he goes, nothing. And she goes, bullshit, or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, yeah, we all have Charlie's ability, bullshit detecting ability, with the people that we're closest to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed Donna as a character in general, and that moment was pretty great. Like, she got Charlie's moment. As, you know, usually yeah. Charlie gets to throw it in people's faces.
Yeah, it was good. Well, it's special for me. I mean, maybe we don't all have that ability with the people we're closest to, if we're close to some, you know, really good liars. But most of us, if your spouse is off, you can tell, you know. So mm-hmm. I love that. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
Mine is after Davis wins at the first race at Peachtree Speedway. That's episode two, Subway. Davis, he's there kind of holding court with all these little kids that are his fans. And he goes, oh, so who wants to sit in the driver's seat? And this little kid's like, me. And the other kid's like, come on, I'm first. I got cancer. And Charlie goes, bullshit. I just thought that was hilarious for her to call out a little kid like that. And it's a dark thing to joke about cancer at all, but I laughed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was such a thing that a kid would do. Like, I want to go yeah. first, I'll just lie.
I know. All right. So let's get into our points, Steve.
I've got a few just short ones, but I really love that throughout the whole episode, Donna is always indicating that she feels this darkness around Davis, that she knows he's evil. Like, two or three times she calls him just pure evil. And that's a sense that she had of him. But I thought that was, mm-hmm. that was interesting that they kept it up throughout the episode.
Yeah. And even his own mother, Jean, was saying, you know, your grandpa, Big Ed, had the devil in him or something, but mm-hmm. he kept it on the track, and you need to keep it on the track. So there really was that theme of him just having this darkness in him. And it, yeah, of course he tried to kill this young girl. I mean, every week someone tries to kill somebody on the show. So there's someone who has and that, but
yeah. usually they succeed.
Yeah. Usually they mm-hmm. succeed. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that, you know, yeah. the reason they didn't kill her this time was because that would have been super dark for Keith to think he accidentally killed his own daughter.
That was Alfred Hitchcock Presents to me.
Mm-hmm.
He thought yeah. that he had succeeded in getting his rival out of the race, and it turned out he may have killed his own daughter. That was a dark twist right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tim Blake Nelson played it beautifully. The pain in that moment when whoever it is says to him, Katie was in the car.
Yeah.
And then, like, his watching his expression change. And then he mm-hmm. starts running. I thought it was a really great moment for him.
Yeah. He's great. I like him a lot. I haven't seen him in a lot of things. Really good in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, of course. Coen Brothers movie with George Clooney and John, what's his name? What the hell's his name? Played in Roseanne.
John Goodman.
Yes. But my favorite thing with him is another Coen Brothers movie, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Mm-hmm. If you haven't seen that, I think there's six vignettes all set in the Old West. His is the first one, Tim Blake Nelson. It's also called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. It's 15 minutes long. It has sharpshooting and singing and dancing, and it's a pleasure and a joy to watch. It's a little violent, of course. It's Coen Brothers, but I would definitely recommend anyone who's curious. It doesn't take much time, 15 minutes. Go on Netflix, watch the first vignette in Ballad of Buster Scruggs. You'll see him at his best.
My favorite Tim Blake Nelson appearance is in Watchmen. The mm-hmm. miniseries oh, yeah. that HBO did. Yeah, he was Looking Glass, the guy with the like completely reflective head mask. And I was thinking about him and that show a lot while I was watching this. And I was like, you know, I think it's time for me to rewatch Watchmen.
Yeah, that was a great, yeah, that was a great series. I thought it took a while to get going, but once it did, I was hooked in. All right, your turn, Penny.
So the first thing that really hit me was the aesthetics of the episode, the cinematography. This was, Christine Ng. She's done several of the other Poker Face episodes. There seem to be three cinematographers who rotate. And, I loved all the stuff in the very beginning, the opening montage of the racetrack. And then, you know, these loving, close-ups of car details. And then the grid, the use of the grids, yes, where there would be like four of the same photo or eight or nine or 12. Mm-hmm. It reminded me so viscerally of the 70s and the 80s. And I was thinking about how many TV shows when I was a kid were about like a car that had a personality, right? There was like, yeah, you know, like the Dukes of Hazzard and Knight Rider and Herbie the Love Bug. And it was like and then I was thinking also about Speed Racer and how he had his number on top of his white car, like Davis did. I just really enjoyed the sort of throwback 70s cinematography. I have an article that we're going to hear in the news about how they did the opening credits that just appear to be a simple yellow font, but there's a whole lot more to it. I don't know. I felt like a little kid at the beginning of the episode. Like, that's the last time I can remember enjoying watching car racing, too, was like when it was Speed Racer. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even like racing, I think, is something that people either don't get, like Charlie doesn't, and aren't interested in much at all. And like, what? Or they're big, huge, rabid fans of. I'm mostly on the side of not really getting it. But when I do get into it, like, I can get into it. And that opening sequence that you just mentioned really helped just accentuate the excitement, the crowds, the lug nuts spinning, you know, the grid, like you said, the rev of the engines, the exhaust. Like, if you're good at presenting it well, you can make it really attractive. It reminded me of that movie, Days of Thunder, with Tom mm-hmm. Cruise, you know, like mm-hmm. if it's a good story, then you can really get into it. And I didn't think I was going to like this episode as much because it's about racing, which I don't care about that much, but I got into it pretty well. I think they presented it really, really well.
I thought so too. And I've watched stock car racing off and on, over my lifetime. And I would get into it for a couple of years and then I'd mm-hmm. not. So I'm kind of in the middle with it, but I do love a good racing movie if the racing shots are done well. And I thought, mm-hmm. I thought this was good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. I like when Charlie says to, Davis, this whole, racing thing, I think I kind of don't get it. He goes, aren't you the one with the 69 Barracuda in the parking lot and All-American Muscle Classic? Yes, but you see, that gets me places, which is technically what a car is for. You're just going in circles. I mean, you're basically just turning left a bunch of times.
Yeah.
The part I really don't understand is the audience. I can understand wanting to do the racing, like, right? Going really fast. I get the appeal. What I don't understand is the watching it. And I've been to like a stock car racing Speedway before, and it is the loudest fucking thing mm-hmm. in the world. And it's not a pleasant noise at all. And people are just eating it up. I didn't see anybody besides me with their hands over their ears. Like, people were just like all into it.
But Penny, I mean, you also just don't like going to the mall. So
yeah, that's true. I don't. But this was, I was more tolerant when I was, when I was a teenager. The Lee USA Speedway was, Yeah, near my friend Seth's house. So we could hear it if we were watching movies at Seth's. It was like, oh, that's wait, yeah, oh, racing tonight.
Yeah, it's much more fun. I mean, for me, like even racing video games, I'm not that into, but it can be fun. My kids play Mario Kart and it's fun to get in there. And there was this one early arcade game called Hard Driving that you actually sat down in, kind of like the one Charlie was playing, mm-hmm. that yeah. felt, you felt the physics of the car going around the corners. And that was cool. And then when I was in high school, my friend Richard, who I podcasted with on Cobra Kai and Mandalorian, he was like, he knew how to pull the e-brake and do a 180 and would do that with us as 18-year-old kids, like going down the street. We made a little movie out of it. My stepdad was a, he taught defensive driving to rookie cops at the local community college. And he was also a very irresponsible person. So he would drive me around the neighborhood at high speed and just barrel around those corners, skidding all the way around just to show me how he'd do it, you know, when I was like 9 years old. And it was fun. It was like high adrenaline. But yeah, just sitting there watching, you got to be a certain kind of person to appreciate that. Now, have I ever been to an actual race? I don't know. Maybe I would like it, but it doesn't seem like it would be that exciting to just sit and watch it.
I went to Talladega Speedway when I was in one of my training schools in the military, and we did a charity thing there, and we got to watch the race. And I got caught up in it. I mean, like, I don't know if I do it all the time, but you got the crowd around you and the roaring of the cars, and they're just going, and you can hear the announcers, and if you walk up to the fence, you can feel the fence shaking from the cars, just how fast they're going around. And I don't know, for me, it gets exciting. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like that, hear that in your voice and hear you talk about it, because clearly there's an appeal, because it has millions of fans. NASCAR is like one of the most popular things in the United States, you know? And I think what you're saying is a big, I mean, even in this opening montage that you were talking about, Penny, when they showed the crowd, they showed some dad with his son pointing at something, and you feel the excitement of the crowd for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, like, if you're going to Talladega or one of the bigger racetracks, it's just like, it's also a spectacle, right? Mm-hmm. Like these little podunk town raceways, they sell like popcorn and cotton candy or whatever. But Talladega, my understanding is that it's like a giant tailgate party the whole time you're there. And that's part of what people love about it.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you're in that center, if you get into that center part, it's like all mobile homes and people grill in, and they get there super early so they can be in that inside that oval there. And yeah, it's exciting, at least for some people, I guess. I could see how some people wouldn't be, but when I was there, it was like, ooh.
Like this show, another cool thing about it is it's just Americana, you know?
Yeah.
Just going all it over is. The place.
It's nice to see so many different slices of American life.
Yeah, for sure.
Reminds me of that show on CNN, United Shades of America. I cannot recommend it enough. It's awesome. It's nonfiction, though, so it's different from this.
Cool.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right. So I'm going to talk about flow, which is key to this episode. I think flow, I love flow. Flow. Penny's doing flowy things with her hands. I mean, it's a state of mind. It's things being smooth and clear, like you're feeling clear, effective, at purpose, right with the world, like you're doing something and it's just happening through you and it feels like it's in the way that it's supposed to happen. It's great. I love flow so much. And this, I mean, I think really the crux of it is when these racers are in flow, then they're more likely to win. And I really think it's about winning and losing. Most of all, that's the crux of it. Feeling like a winner or a loser. You're good or you're shit, you know? And it's about aging and being past your prime and feeling threatened by younger people coming in. I wouldn't know anything about that, but that's just what it seems like. And just wanting to feel like a winner versus a loser. And Keith says, an Owens can't retire a loser. That prompts him to keep going. And that's the thing about racing. It's a competition, and it's an anxious thing. You're like the metaphor of racing for life. If you get into that mindset, then you got to battle to stay at the front, and you feel like there's always somebody else nipping at your heels, ready to pass you by, you know, or you're struggling to finally get to be the one who's first. Like, that started to make me feel like I wouldn't want to be a racer if you're just always worried about it's the rat race, you know, personified at its most like immediate level. And right at the beginning,
doesn't appeal to me at all.
Yeah. And right at the beginning, these announcers set up this rivalry. Welcome everyone to Peachtree Speedway, where today's race is crucial in determining this year's late model champion. Will it be the brash newcomer and points leader Davis McDowell, the crowd cheers, or veteran Keith Owens in his final season, just 5 points back in second place? And Keith spits and Davis flips him off. So right off the bat, it's clear that these two are rivals. And then as the race is about to begin, we see Keith breathing nervously, looking down at his hand, and it's shaking. Mm-hmm. And I was focused on his wedding ring at first, because now, like, I understand now a little more why, if you listen to our Glass Onion podcast, Jade was looking for things and saw the twist in that, which I won't repeat in case people haven't seen it. Because now that I'm getting into all these, like, where there's something to figure out like this, you just find yourself looking for what's going to be key, you know? And I'm like, what is this ring? But it was really the shaking. And it personifies that he's off his flow. He's lost his flow. And he says it to his wife afterwards. I lost my flow, Donna. And in this case, it's all about this guy, Davis, getting in his head. And when you're in your head like that, it's hard to do anything right. Like he says, I've lost the damn race before they even drop the green flag. It's like he's already lost. And I'm going to get a little bit personal here, but this is why I love podcasting, because I almost always feel like I'm in flow. Mm-hmm. And so it gives me this regular, consistent experience of getting in touch with that feeling, which just kind of permeates out into the rest of my life, which I love. But there are times, and especially when I first started, where I would focus too much on other podcasts that are higher in the charts. And then I would feel anxious. And if I thought about it like a competition, you know, like flow only happens when I'm focusing on the fun parts, the curiosity, the interest in the material, the appreciation, the connection with you guys and the listeners and the fun of it and the joking. Like that's when it's flow. When I think about it as a competition between other podcasters or something, then I get in my head and it's no good. And I don't even do that hardly at all anymore, especially not on the podcast, but when I'm off, maybe, I mean, I do feel kind of competitive about it, but that can't be the central thing. But that's what these two are doing. If there's ever a racer who just does it for the love of the racing and is able to somehow get that stuff out of his head, maybe he would do better. I don't know. But I do feel like it's heavily a mind sport. Like you're like almost battling yourself in these things.
I understood it in the context of both Point Break, that movie about surfing, where Patrick Swayze talks about being, you know, in, I don't remember what the verb, what the word was he used, but, and I've always called it in the zone when I feel that way. Like when you're just like, everything's lining up and you're just like, you feel quick and agile. It's an amazing feeling. And then I think a lot of people would refer to it as their mojo, right? Like,
oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I lost my mojo. I also thought about, the twisties that, Simone Biles had, and it caused her to drop out of, a gymnastics match because she, you know, she couldn't find herself in the air. And it's a little bit like that. It's like,
yeah.
If you're a race driver, it's dangerous to lose your flow, right? Because like you'll crash. Yeah.
Yeah, because that's the thing about racing is it's really fast. And so every minor movement has immediate quick impact. The acceleration, the wheel, like a tiny flick of the wheel could kill you. And if you don't do it exactly right, then you're going to lose for one thing. But yeah, you could also be in danger. So yeah, on the final lap here, Davis smacks against the back of Keith's car, spinning him around, and he's out of the race. And that's what prompts him to sabotage Davis so he can knock him out of the next race and have a shot at the championship. And when he does that, he sabotages Davis's car. His hand isn't shaking anymore because he feels like, so that, that shows where his flow is about not feeling like there's someone else nipping at his heels like that.
Yeah,
or right. supplant, getting ready to supplant him. And then we see Davis is going through similar. He sees himself as the future of the sport, as the title, like the title. But Katie is his biggest threat, that damn Owens family keeping him down. And then when he races her on the go-kart track and she wins, it's a little nitpick, but I think in go-kart racing, probably the lighter person has a huge advantage. But maybe I just say that because my kids always beat me. I don't know. But anyway, that's not the point. The point is that she clearly has more skill and he knows it and he's shaken. So now he's decided that he wants to keep her from competing. And in the end, well, I know this is a long point. My other points aren't this long, I promise. But Charlie figures out what happened, right? And really, you could say that had no impact because he didn't get caught. And Katie getting better was the impact that caused him to lose his flow. When he finds out that she's better, he's nervous. And now he knows he's going to lose and he's not the future of the sport. She is. And that all would have happened even if Charlie never entered the picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I think they did try to kind of make it so she did have an impact, because at the end, when he's about to race, Charlie comes up to his window and tells him, I stopped by the hospital. I had a good talk with Donna. She was telling me all this interesting stuff about Keith, about this flow. So it's interesting she brings it up. And about what happens when you lose it. Look at old Keith. He stepped up in the end, did the right thing, confessed. Yeah, he's just the man she knew he was. But then she goes, oh, and I had a good talk with Katie. Oh, yeah, she's totally lucid. Sort of a miracle thing. The doctor's saying she's going to bounce back fast. I tell you, the way the girls talks about racing, I finally got it. A month, a year, I don't know what it's going to take, but she'll be racing again soon, and she's coming for you. It's just a matter of time. And he goes, ain't no one better than Davis McDowell. I'm the future of the goddamn sport. And she's like, well, we both know that's bullshit. And so maybe she kind of got in his head there in a way, because then you see his hand and it's shaking just like Keith's was at the beginning, and you can tell he's lost his flow. And I don't know. I think that probably would have happened even if Charlie hadn't said anything and he found out that Katie was coming back. But they tried to really have it so she put it in his head, you know.
I'm worried about Katie. Because Davis is still like free and out there to try to kill her again. Like, he's a sociopath.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's why I hope, like what I said earlier, I think that like the fact the car is at the CSI car lab, the police have it. I think they're going to find some evidence that the seatbelt was tampered with. Sure. And then they can work that backwards to figure out, oh, this is something here. You know, so yeah. I think we're left with that. And I like that, you know, it's been a topic, I think, almost every episode about how Charlie inserts herself into a situation and that may cause the murder to happen. And yet, like you said, Jason, in this case, I think all these events would have played out the same whether Charlie was there or not.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but I think I really do think, especially the fact that he didn't get caught in the end, and maybe he will. You're right, Steve. But working with what we have in the story that we saw, I think that really shows that the main punishment is he's going to be in his own hell, because with both these guys, it's all about feeling like a winner or feeling like a loser. And if you're off your game, then you're definitely going to lose. And in the end, the point that they ended the episode on is he is off his game now. His hand is shaky. She just told him, you know, this flow thing, but Katie's back. She's going to ruin your flow. He says, I'm the future of the sport. No, that's bullshit. So it's just like, no, man, you failed. You're a failure. And that's his own personal hell, at least for now, until the car CSI people come and take him off to jail. And then he really gets punished. So, Steve, what do you
I think the other one, another one that I have that I'm, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I just watched it again. And I thought when Keith says, not Keith, when Davis says something, oh gosh, I just lost it completely. And Charlie didn't call him on. There was a lie, but Charlie didn't call it. Oh, he said he went out on the tow truck run. The first time it comes up, he mentions that he wasn't at home when he was on a tow truck run when the car got tampered with, and she didn't call out BS on him. And I thought that was interesting. Unless I'm wrong on that. Was that before or after?
If that did happen, I feel like, yeah, that I can't remember for sure because he wasn't in the tow truck.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that's what we know. We didn't know that at first. We found out later. Right. And then, like I said, he says something to when they're talking about when Tim Blake Nelson could have tampered with the car. And he says, well, I wasn't at home. I was on a tow truck run. And Charlie doesn't call out the lie. So I thought that was interesting. This, and I didn't notice.
Is that what he said? Or did he say, I bet he's the one that called for a tow.
He did say that too. He said that he thought it was Keith would have been the one that called for a fake tow. But I could have swore he said he did the tow truck run.
Yeah, maybe.
And I don't know if that was before or after we knew that the mom had done the tow truck run. So I.
Yeah. But Charlie should have known it was bullshit anyway.
Right. Yeah. And that's all I'm saying is she didn't call him out on that lie. And just like, you know, occasionally she doesn't call it out as something as a lie. Like with Tim, with Keith, when she didn't call him on his lie because she didn't want to get hurt. Maybe this time she didn't call it out as a lie. I don't know. That's what it just bugged me this last time I noticed it. And I was like,
maybe she thought it was insignificant. Like at the time she hadn't thought that Davis was implicated. So she was like, cause she does say like people lie all the time. Like it's
right.
You know?
Yeah. Okay.
And she doesn't always call people on it.
Yeah. That's it. That was just a small one.
It's kind of rude, really. You know, like it is, if she's in conversation with people and she's just like, bullshit.
Yeah.
So here's what they said. Davis says, a tow call came in last night before practice, but it ended up being a prank. I bet it was Owens who made the call to get me out of the house so he can sabotage my car. That conniving little bitch. He fucking tried to kill me. So none of that's a lie. He says, I bet he tried to get me out of the house, but he doesn't say he was out of the house.
Right. Okay. So he doesn't exactly lie.
Yeah. I mean, it's I really think that this guy Davis, even though he failed, is super clever because, they had Charlie conveniently tell him about her power after she told the kid who said he had cancer bullshit.
Yeah.
That was, for a funny joke, but also so that there would be a reason for him to tell, for her to tell Davis about the power. So then Davis spent the whole rest of the episode cleverly navigating around that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's really smart.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
It's scary because he's also apparently has no empathy or remorse.
Well, that's what sociopaths are.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, I guess dumb sociopaths don't have as much of a success rate.
Yeah.
Dumb that psychopaths. Could be. Anyway. All right. Penny?
Yeah. I just wanted to talk about the cast a little bit more because Randy, who was the other guy at the arcade, is the actor who played Harrison Morgan on the Dexter reboot. He is Dexter's son.
Oh, wow.
Jack Alcott. Yeah.
Jack Alcott. And there's talk about that being like there being more sequels to Dexter. I don't want to give spoilers to what just happened, but, you know, maybe he would be in that and that would be cool. I liked the reboot. I thought it was really good. So I want there to be another one. Tim Blake Nelson, we already talked about. Those were really the exciting ones for me. I didn't know the actor who played Donna. I thought she was fantastic, but I looked at her IMDb and I'm like, I haven't seen any of these things. Like, right. I've never seen her before, but I hope to see her again in the future because I thought she was great.
Yeah, I think they were all great as usual. They were, mm-hmm. I liked them all good.
Mm-hmm. And Randy had my favorite line of the episode.
Which was?
Karma is like some kind of consequence.
Yeah. And what does she say back? You're right.
It is like a consequence. Yeah. Captain Obvious. I love that. So funny. See, now you guys said it wasn't a funny episode, but that was
a great moment. It was really hilarious. Yeah.
Okay. Next for me is Things Not As They Seem. And kind of subversion of the form. And This show is pretty formulaic in the most delightful way, I would say. We always get introduced to characters in a situation, a murder occurs, and then we go back in time and see that Charlie was there in some way in the middle of things, and then she solves the murder, and she usually brings the culprit or culprits to justice. But they're always playing with it, with our expectations, which I think is actually part of the formula of the show, is to subvert our expectations. Things we think are one way are almost always something else. But this time it was so clever. I thought we had what we think is a killer, but then Tim Blake Nelson, Keith, we learn he actually wasn't trying to kill later, because I thought he was, right, in the first place. It was a surprise to me that he was just trying to incapacitate him so he would be out of the race, and then Keith could be in it. But then the victim of his sabotage ends up being someone that he cares about, which is a shock. And then the biggest subversion is this other guy, Davis, hijacks the sabotage attempt and turns it against the guy, which I thought, as we said, it was brilliant. Not only is he getting rid of his competition, Katie, but he's getting revenge on the guy who tried to hurt him, Keith. And then if his plan had worked, he could easily just claim innocence because Keith was the one who did the sabotage. So it's such a like lucky thing for a circumstance for him. And and then even better, like with Charlie, he can use this her power to nail this other guy because he can just keep saying the truth. Keith sabotaged the car. That's true. She knows it's true. You know, things like that. So it was very, very elegant, the whole thing. Some more things that turned out to be different than we thought. We think it was Davis in the car and he's dead. Then we find out it was Katie and that she's dead, but then she's actually alive. Now, I thought Katie was dead on first watch, so I was extra shocked at the end when she was alive and well.
Yeah.
But on second watch, I realized that was because I wasn't paying close enough attention, because in the spot where Katie crashed, I think that's where it was anyway, there's this whole shrine that you see in crash spots with flowers in her picture. But it, all the notes say get well soon, which I didn't notice at first. And then the news says she's in a coma and they're wishing her a speedy recovery. So we knew watching the episode that she wasn't dead.
Yeah,
I missed that the first time. I just thought
me too.
She was.
I totally missed that the first time. Mm-hmm. I didn't see the get well soon thing, and I don't know if I just didn't hear the in a coma or what. Yeah. But I was just like, and
I thought the in a coma added some fun tension. Like, is she gonna die? Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Which was true. Yeah, that was true tension. I also love how this show plays with our perspectives on people, like. You think someone's good and then not so much, or maybe they are, and then, keep switching gears on us. And Davis seemed like a dick at first. Like, he goes up in the middle of Keith's interview and goes, "You're the one ruining the sport, old timer. How about you get the fuck out of the way?" And they get in a fight. Or when he went over to their house and ran over their flowers and pulled out their really cool log cabin mailbox. Mm-hmm. That's an asshole move. But then when he's talking to these kids and he gives them peaches that he won from the peach tree speedway trophy, and the kid says, "You smoked Keith Owens and punched him in the face. Fuck that guy, man. That was baller." And he goes, "No need for that. Now I lost my cool. And the truth is, Owens ain't a bad guy." I probably should have known that was fake, but in the moment I was like, maybe he's not so bad. Yeah. And then they have him being the one that's Charlie's friend, and he's being all flirty with her.
It was an arcade romance.
Yeah.
They're messy. Don't want to get into one of those.
Yeah. And I that was really interesting. He goes, "Worth a shot." And she goes, "I respect it." And then he backed off. And I like that. Like, these days it's scary to even flirt, you know, I mean, but if you like someone, you got to give it a shot. And then no means no. So I respected it too. And I liked her response. I think they probably did that whole thing just to kind of throw us off the scent that he was the bad guy, maybe, like, give him something else to represent the story. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Why did they do that, do you think? Or actually, you know what? A really poker face elegant way why they did it is because in their flirtation, he was teaching her how to drive the arcade car. And then she used what he taught her to get away from him in the end.
Right. She's like, trust the car.
It's so cool. But anyway, why do you think she said no?
I'm not convinced that Charlie is straight.
Oh.
I mean, even though she didn't want to hook up with Marge, there's something about her. I get a gay vibe off of her. But also, he's like 12 years younger than she is.
I was going to say, that was for me. I thought he was quite a bit younger than her. So
yeah.
It looked like to me.
I mean, it could be any reason. She just might not like him. But for me, it seemed really quick. And also, maybe she just sensed that he's evil you know, something off about him. And also, maybe she just doesn't want to get involved with anyone because she's on the road, you know, on the run from killers and stuff. Who knows? But anyway, he seems like he's an okay guy for a while there. He may be a little too fixated on winning and a little too cocky, but just kind of gray area. But then we learn that, he's this dark killer and he would kill for the track and everything. And so I enjoy that, being wrong about people or having them switch gears and show new facets of people that change our perspective on them. That's cool.
Yeah. Just like, I love that moment when he's talking about Katie and how she crashed because of her own incompetence or something like that. And Charlie goes, BS. And he's like, oh yeah, because of your cancer thing, right? And then he admits that, I don't believe that. And that starts the investigation of something wrong with the car. And I thought that's an interesting way of, he got her, like you were talking earlier, he got her to use her power to figure out that Keith did.
Yeah.
They found the
that
sabotage.
Was a bait.
Yeah.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah.
And he pivoted so quickly.
He knew she would, I think he actually knew she would call him on that. He was saying it just so she would call him out, so then he could say that and make it feel like it was her idea. You know?
And be like, I don't believe she died because it's so something must have been wrong with the car. So,
right. Yeah. Steve, do you have any more?
I have a couple notes, a couple short ones. I know absolutely nothing about cars. That's like when they were talking about the carburetor and the gear line and he knows her car is a 69 Barracuda. I'm just like, oh, okay. I know those are things, but I just put in my notes, I know nothing about cars. So
I'm in a similar boat.
Me neither.
I don't know much about cars.
This stepdad I mentioned who taught rookie cops defensive driving, he was a mechanic. We used to live out on a dairy. We'd have like 9 cars out there in various states of repair. And also, he was a total jerk, so it really turned me off on the whole mechanic thing.
You can understand.
Yeah, it would.
Penny, got any more?
I had some issues with some of the logic, and I didn't want to say it up front because it's a downer, but when Keith made the phony phone call for the tow truck and Gene answered the phone, why did Keith assume that Davis was going to go out on the tow run? Like, he had to know that was Gene on the phone. And they know each other, right? He knows she could have done the tow run. And even if he thinks Davis went out, he knows Gene is at home then and could see him messing with the car in the garage. It just didn't, like, seem to work.
Well, I would answer that with, that's a good point, but maybe just to try to smooth it over, maybe Davis is the driver who does the calls and it's really unusual for Gene to do it, but she did it in this case because she didn't want him to go out.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
I don't know if that's really her job. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm with you, Penny. How would he know that she wouldn't look out the window at just the right time? Like Davis did.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a risk. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
You know, the garage is a separate spot, so he was hoping she wouldn't.
And then Charlie makes a big deal out of finding the lucky picture on the workbench, but it's after the car had been the crashed car had been towed back to the garage. Like he could have gotten the picture out of the, crashed car and rescued it then. Like maybe it didn't get hurt in the fire. Like she was like, this is my evidence. You took the picture out because you didn't want it to get ruined and you knew the car was going to crash. And I was like, you don't have proof that he took it out before.
That was a pretty bad fire.
Yeah, I think that picture would have definitely had some damage on it if it was in the car.
I don't know. The car, when they were looking at it, when they were investigating it at the garage, when Randy and Davis and Charlie were looking at it together, just didn't look like that bad. It was still white. It wasn't like blackened from the fire and like only the front.
Yeah, I had
crashed.
A problem with that. That car should have been way more damaged than what it.
Based on what we saw, but then so yeah. should have. What's her name?
Katie. Yeah.
Well, but they wear those fire retardant suits, and she had a helmet on, and so that's what I got was the impression when they said the seatbelt malfunctioned was that she couldn't get out of the car quick enough, and so maybe the smoke. I don't know.
I thought maybe she hit her head, like was thrown forward. But
well, she did have that neck thing on when she was in the hospital bed. So my question was, why would they be practicing at the same time? Why would both cars be on the track practicing?
Yeah,
I always thought
weird.
when they practice, they would practice by themselves.
I know that's how horses do it, but I don't know about cars.
I also thought maybe it's a little bit suspension of disbelief that Keith wouldn't know that it wasn't Davis in the car.
Yeah, they all get in their cars like where they can see each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they made a big deal out of him getting in his car way earlier for that practice run. That's why I was confused that they were both on the track at the same time.
Oh, okay.
Because they didn't start. I don't think they started at the same time. You know.
And since we're doing nitpicks, I also think it was a bit of a risk to sabotage the car with this fish hook because someone else may have found that too later investigating it, you know.
Yeah, that does seem traceable. Or at least, you know who's a big fisher.
Right.
Yeah.
It's this guy's archenemy.
Yeah.
The only other question I had was, who doesn't know a Deliverance reference?
I know. Even if you haven't seen the movie, you know a little bit.
No, they're
about
young.
It.
Kids forget things now.
Okay.
You know, things that we think take for granted are fading away from the cultural zeitgeist.
Okay.
It's true.
I believed it.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, just a little bit more about racing. Like, I was going to talk about the whole opening montage and what the appeal of racing is and stuff like that. We already talked about all that. But I also wanted to talk about just a couple other racing things that I've kind of enjoyed. Like, I didn't really like the Pixar movie Cars much until my kids were old enough to enjoy it. And they're so in love with it that I grew to find it pretty charming. And if you go to California Adventure Park next to Disneyland in Southern California, there's a whole Cars Land where you can see the actual big Mater and
nice.
Lightning McQueen and everything. And you can go on the Cars ride, which is awesome. I mentioned Days of Thunder. American Graffiti is another one written and directed by George Lucas, set in my hometown of Modesto, California, where Harrison Ford and this other guy go out to old Paradise Road and drag race their classic cars. And George Lucas continued on with that theme. I think he was fascinated with speed. So we have the Death Star trench run in Star Wars. We have the speeder bike scene in the forest moon of Endor and Return of the Jedi. And then, of course, the pod race in Phantom Menace. Like, he just took it and made it sci-fi.
And
I guess that's about it for that one. I had one more point about how Charlie cracked the case. Do you guys have any more points before we go to notes?
Just at the mic drop moment, he didn't exactly say the title of the episode because he threw a GD in there instead of just saying the future of the sport. So... kind of
the future
a micro
of the GD sport.
Yeah. So he didn't exactly say the title, but he kind of said the title.
I mean, I think the final arbiter on whether that counts is clearly you. So or not. Okay. So how I like to kind of lay out how she cracked the case. So when she goes to confront Keith because Davis, you know, told her there's something wrong with the car, I think Keith did it. And he says, I didn't touch Davis's car. She knows it's bullshit. Then he confesses on TV. He says he never meant for anyone to get hurt, which then she makes note of. Well, that was true. He said, I know that's true because of my ability. And so then she thinks that the seatbelt failing must have been an accident. But then when she hears Davis telling this kid what happened to Katie was a fluke, her seatbelt malfunction was a freak accident, she knows that's bullshit. And so that's like a huge tell. She finds out from Jean, Davis's mom, that he was home all night when the car was sabotaged.
Mm-hmm.
She heard him speculate that it was a gear tie fastened to the hook. And then when Keith confessed, he confirmed that. So she's like, well, it could have been a fishing line or anything else. How did you know it was a gear tie? There was also something in there about her knowing that he messed with seatbelt wrenches or something. I don't know if she was just saying that or
I think those were just words. Line. She was, I think she, those were just words. She was, cause he goes seatbelt. What's a seatbelt wrench?
Oh yeah. You know? So, that was,
so bullshit, I think that was just her spouting words out. Cause she was nervous
and saying, I know you sabotage the seatbelt. If there was something else in there, what, maybe one of the listeners will write it. And then the thing about seeing the picture later, and to her that meant that he took it out knowing he wasn't going to be in the car. So that was all the things that I got. And then of course she confronts the killer with her evidence again, and he was about to kill her if she hadn't opened the garage door. I think if she's going to keep confronting the perps, she should at least start recording it. Come on. I mean, you shouldn't be confronting the perps, but record it.
I didn't get that fully either, because she opens the door right as the mom is walking up to, like, lucky. She knew the mom was out there. And I was like, if she just opened the door and nobody was there, he would have been like, yeah, what are you doing?
They could have had the mom make a noise or something.
You know, there may have been a small noise in there. Maybe. I'm not sure.
I don't know how Davis thought he was going to get away with bludgeoning Charlie to death with his mom, like, looking for her keys all over the place. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He had just yelled, like, Mom, your keys are in the garage. So,
right.
And then he's like ready to like hit Charlie with a crowbar. I'm like, your mom's coming.
Well, and then he chases her down with the truck. She does the 180 and he just says, oh, well, I guess she got away.
Yeah. It's a little bit like Dukes of Hazzard when they would race away from Roscoe. Was that the cop's name?
Roscoe.
They would cover the they would get to the county line and Roscoe would be like, arr, like, I can't follow them.
Like, I don't know. It's a tow truck. It's not maneuverable. She's off. She's gone. She's out of here. Okay. I believe it. But whatever. Yeah. Any other notes before we get into funny things?
I thought it was really interesting that twice Donna sort of fueled the flames against Davis when they were driving home from the race, and Keith says, I shouldn't have called him an idiot. She says, he's way worse than an idiot.
Yeah, she calls him evil. That's the first time she says her call him
there's
evil.
Something, yeah, there's something evil in there. Gave me the shivers. I know she said shivers. And then after he rips out the mailbox, she says, like, fuck this flow nonsense. You beat that evil, whatever she called him. I think it was an MF. Yeah.
Yeah, that got her on her husband's side there when he did that.
Oh, here it is. You get out there and you beat that evil little shit. It feels to me like knowing, you know, the personality of her husband and where he is with his in his mental state, that just seemed like a really dangerous thing to say to him. But
yeah,
you know, she's,
people are imperfect.
People are people. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I had a couple. Joe Lawson was one of the co-writers of the story. I think he's the main reason for it. It was inspired by his knowledge of racing. I don't know if you had this in the news, but he's the creator and writer of the Geico caveman commercials.
Oh.
And I was sort of wondering why Katie has to wait for her dad to retire before she can start. I thought maybe it's because they only have enough money to fund one racer. It costs a lot of money, but I don't know.
That's what I thought. Just they only have the one car. But
if you're good at it, you'll make enough money.
Well, and you would think for him to know that she has the gift, she must have been racing something, you know, at some point. So.
I mean, it was interesting too. I meant to say it when you mentioned that earlier, Penny, that that Keith said she has the gift. My dad had it. My grandpa had it, but I didn't or something. Mm-hmm. It was interesting of him to say that about himself, given that he's a racer.
And he's been winning. Like he's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he just being humble or it was weird?
I kind of wanted more of that kind of stuff. Like the sort of spiritual side of racing. I'm probably the only one, but those are my favorite parts of Point Break is when Bodie is telling, what's his name? The FBI agent, you know, about the wave and being one with the wave and all that stuff. I like that part.
You know, I mentioned my friend Rich knows how to do 180s and that we mm-hmm. made a little movie about that where he was chasing me around in his truck and then he pulled a 180 and someone came out of their house and was like, I'm going to call the cops on you guys. But then he gets out and we run through my grandma's house and all over the place. That was, we did that because we loved Point Break and that foot chase scene. Mm-hmm. Remember that?
Where, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Running around. Yeah, that really inspired that. And then I decided to go skydiving too because of that movie.
Oh, really? That's that awesome.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It's one of those movies that if it's on TV, I have to watch the whole thing. Like,
yeah,
I don't care. I have to watch Point Break beginning to end.
I got to watch that again. Last point is it ended without the perpetrator being caught. I had read that there was a sudden ending from listeners who wrote in, or I forget who, and also that there was a question of whether the punishment fit the crime. So I went into the episode knowing those two things. And so that I think I was less surprised by it and maybe more accepting of the ending than I would have been if I hadn't kind of been ready for it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. All right, let's get into some funny stuff. We'll take turns if we all have anything. Steve?
I've got a couple of lines Katie says in the car, she says, you got punched and now you're icing your face. You are literally a sore loser.
That was such teenage snark. That was perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I already said my favorite, which was the karma one, but yes. I also enjoyed it when Randy and Davis simultaneously said something's wrong with the car or the car's broken. And then Charlie refers to it as a grease monkey mind meld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because they're all playing off each other. Davis says, she's too good of a driver to make that mistake. That turn, Randy, way too deep. Davis, way too hard. Straight into the wall. It's almost like, Randy, it's totally like, Davis, you think, Charlie, you want to cut me in on this grease monkey mind meld? Davis, seems like there is. And then they both go, something wrong with the car. Yeah.
That was a really cute moment.
It was.
At the arcade go-kart place, Charlie says, hey, Randy, some kid went full Linda Blair on the number 7 car. Randy goes, shit, that ain't nothing. I found a whole Duke once. Charlie goes, oh, wow, something to look forward to.
Yeah, I had part of that in mind as well.
I liked Randy a lot. He was my favorite character.
I think I liked him better than Harrison and Dexter. Yeah. Steve, more?
The last one I have is just, I can't remember. It was one of those lines from Davis where he says, you can cancer dog him, when she's sending him to her to go see Keith. And she's like, I find that choice or that we settled on that or unsettling or something like that, that we settled on that.
That metaphor.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think I had a couple more. I love that Jean has this massive glob of like 50 keys that she still manages to misplace.
Yeah.
Somehow. Apparently has a habit of misplacing it. I like that Charlie a couple times says, hey, no running at the arcade and just ignored by the kids running by.
Right.
Yeah.
And just that whole thing of, I got to repeat it again, where Randy goes, well, I guess that's that. Man, karma's like some kind of consequence. I agree. Karma is like a consequence. So good.
It's fantastic.
Faster than a bullet from a gun. He is faster than everyone. Quicker than the blinking of an eye. Like a flash, you can miss him going by. No one knows quite how he does it, but it's true.
All right. What about some news?
There was some really good news, and the articles I found are really long, so I just took out some excerpts here and there. The first one is from consequence.net, which I also thought was really funny. Poker Face guest star Tim Blake Nelson on Rian Johnson. He's constantly trying to outdo himself. As Nelson tells Consequence, it's all rooted in creator Rian Johnson's signature approach. The way that he shoots, he's always saying to you, I know I'm a step ahead of you, and that's part of the fun of this. It's a very, almost retro style, and nobody else does it quite the way Rian does. Like other Poker Face installments, the future of the sport features more than one twist as the full nature of the crime evolves. I loved how the indictment of characters kept unfolding into new shapes so that everybody's vulnerability kept trumping other characters' vulnerabilities in this escalation, which made each crime that happens throughout the episode worse than the one before it. Nelson says, you never knew really who ultimately was going to end up as the episode's most nefarious person. Continues Nelson, that's what I love about Ryan's aesthetic, because in the Knives Out movies and then in Poker Face, he's constantly trying to outdo himself as a storyteller in a narrative tradition that he clearly loves, which is the mystery. And a really great mystery has twists and then twists upon the twist. I love being in an episode that does that in a quite breathtaking way. Many Poker Face guest stars have a long-standing relationship with either the show's creator or its star. In the case of Nelson, he first connected with Leone after directing her in the 2001 Holocaust drama The Gray Zone, a very different project from Poker Face.
Never heard of
Leone
it.
Yeah, I haven't either. Leone is one of those actors who just makes you better, he says, because she offers so much nuance. If you simply react to what she's giving you, you're going to find truth in the moment.
Nice.
And then there was a whole bunch of super pretentious stuff, but we'll link it in the show notes. It was like, oh, I'll only work on TV if it's like an independent film. It was just really snotty. All right. The second one is
from... I stand behind that. I think it's a good ethic to have.
It was from IndieWire, and it said, credit where credit's due, how Poker Face uses a font to pay homage to its 70s inspirations. And this, again, was a really long article, so I'll just read parts. Rian Johnson's Case of the Week mystery series, Poker Face, is a hit with audiences and critics, but the Peacock show's stylish throwback title sequence has its own devoted fan base. People have been writing to say, I cheered when this yellow type and a copyright block came up, said Marky Johnson, the founder and creative director of The Maid Shop, the Denver-based design studio behind the credits, also Rian Johnson's cousin. It's funny that whether you know the type or not, it's this alchemy of details. This shade of yellow, this type of shadow, this type of optical effect all coalesces, and it has been really rewarding. Describing the typefaces of the era as kind of grotesque and pretty utilitarian, the designer admitted that the type of font they chose left them nowhere to hide because of their simplicity, which meant every decision mattered more. This wasn't meant to be ultra-nostalgic or an homage to any specific show, he said, adding, needed to set it up an expectation, but also feel like completely out of the moment. Although they didn't create a custom typeface, they created a mood board of inspirations, including The Rockford Files, Dallas, MASH, Magnum PI, and other shows. Because the sequences on the original shows always started over picture, they never knew what would be behind or under the lettering. There's this modern approach to that, the drop shadow, which is much maligned, the creative director described. Instead of that drop shadow, they had this thick, inky black extrusion baked into it that was almost structural. So it feels like this three-dimensional object. You can put any picture behind it. That meant that Johnson could put almost any image behind it, and it would pop.
Hmm.
And then there's
all those shows you mentioned. I love, yeah. By the way, and I'm picturing Dallas.
Yeah.
Yeah. The exception of Dallas. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot more in this article about optical titles, and I just thought it was really interesting that back in the 70s, the title cards at the beginning were painted on acetate and then like a clear background and then filmed, and then the films were merged, and so it gave it a grainy photographic like look that they had to digitally recreate in this case.
It's very cool. I love that.
But we'll link the rest of it in the show notes. I love graphic design stuff. I think it's really nerdy and cool.
You weren't into Dallas, Steve. Did you ever give it a chance?
Yeah. I remember watching the couple of episodes here and there, and of course when JR got shot.
Yeah.
The whole one season being a complete dream sequence, yeah. Or whatever it was.
JR got shot in the season finale of one season, and then my family moved to Germany where we had no American TV. And so I didn't find out who shot JR for like 3 years.
Well, it was such a disappointment anyway. The anticipation was much better. See, you actually had a better time because you got to extend your anticipation out even longer.
I guess so, yeah. I just remember a lot of people wearing t-shirts that summer that said, who shot JR? They were like everywhere.
Yeah, it was everywhere, yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else?
Nope.
That was really good. That was
The big news, I forgot, is that Poker Face got picked up for a second season.
Oh, nice. I haven't heard that. So that's great.
All the articles that I found about that were really boring, and they all just had the same facts, which were, it's been doing well, and it's picked up for a second season.
So. Cool.
Cool.
That's amazing. Yeah. It feels, I know, validating, especially for Jade, who really pushed for us to cover this show. And she had posted in one of our host chats that there was a IMDb list of the top four shows. It was The Last of Us. What was the other one? Damn. And Poker Face was number three, and 1923 was number four. Maybe it was, I think it was Yellow Jackets. And we are covering all of those. So I was like, yeah, cool.
Yeah. We just have excellent taste.
That's right.
Collectively.
Right on. All right. Let's get into some listener feedback. Steve.
Okay. Steve Barr says, worst episode so far. The setting didn't feel anything like the South. And even from what little I know of racing, those sequences were poor. Must be how Charlie feels detecting BS everywhere. Only positive comment I've read about is it is a praise for the use of Asian actors in non-ethnic roles. The good news is the next one is supposed to be much better. Well, sorry you didn't like it, Steve. Maybe after listening to us.
Wait a minute. Is that the right one? Because
he might be referring to Gene and Davis. I think those actors might be partially Asian. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought they were Hispanic, and then I read this and I was like, well, maybe it could be.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It feels, because he mentioned the South too. Yeah. And I had seen that, so that's why I was asking you why you guys presumed it was in the South. But maybe he's talking about, I don't know. Anyway, okay, well, whatever. I think I read this too before I started watching this episode, and I know Jade said it was, I think she said it was Hurley's favorite, so I was prepared to not like it as much, and I probably, it was not one of my favorites, but after watching it twice and now talking about it with you guys, I liked it quite a lot. It wasn't as funny as some of the other ones, but it was really clever and interesting and with some impactful moments and twists, and the racing stuff was exciting, so I thought it was damn good.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it the first time I watched it. I wasn't disappointed at all. So,
yeah. Lisa Edmondson Walker says, this was my least liked episode so far. None of the main characters were likable. There really wasn't a satisfying punishment for any of the bad deeds, and I needed more suspension of belief than usual. As a drag racing fan, I did get a kick out of seeing Lucas Oil as a sponsor, though. I keep wondering if Charlie's luck confronting the bad guys alone and not getting seriously injured will hold out. You and me both.
Mm-hmm. It will.
Maybe
what's
she'll
the alternative?
Get like pepper spray or something.
Yeah, and start recording those conversations. Liza Hawkins says, I'm so glad they announced a season two. Agree with you on the sentiment of enjoying it more than I expected, even loving the other stuff Natasha has been a part of creatively or otherwise. That's cool. I see too on our Facebook, we have another message that I'll read. Paul Jensen says, some thoughts, because the first five are so much fun, this one felt a little drab. I could see that. Also, if you're running a precision automobile like Tim Blake Nelson in your race, open her up and see what he can do. After watching every other major guest star choose scenery, Nelson seemed too self-contained. I did like that they played with the form a bit. Didn't hate the episode, but hoping next week brings back the humor. Tim Blake Nelson usually plays characters who are less contained than this. Mm-hmm. So you may expect that from him. But if I try to get rid of that expectation and just appreciate how he played it, I think he did really well. But I could see where you might hope for him to be a little more bombastic or something, you know?
He had a lot of pathos in his face. He did a lot of like great, like emotional face changes, which I imagine is difficult for actors.
Right.
We don't have our resident actor
to
tell us how hard that is.
I know.
Darn it. Okay, well, we do have a call from her. But first, I'm going to play a call from Paul. Here he is.
Hi, Murder Magneteers. This is Paul. I wrote in last week about Columbo connections to the show. And I've got another Columbo connection for you for the latest Poker Face episode, Future of the Sport. A little tricky, this one. Columbo doesn't do a lot of sports stuff. So I was looking for a sabotaged car episode, which for 70s cop shows was pretty common. See every other episode of the Rockford Files.
Yeah.
And I was also looking for a victim who seemingly wasn't not the original target. One episode I found gets very close to both. Season 2, Episode 5 of Columbo, titled Requiem for a Falling Star. We're back in the world of acting. In this case, we're talking about movie actress Nora Chandler, who's played by All About Eve's Ann Baxter. She's being blackmailed by a gossip columnist who is threatening to reveal some shady stuff about her past. So Nora sabotages his car, eventually setting it on fire. But instead of killing the writer, she kills his girlfriend who is driving the car, who also happens to be Nora's longtime assistant. There's a little cameo in this one that's fun. It's Edith Head, the costume designer. And a year after this episode, Peter Falk presented Edith Head with the Oscar for her work on The Sting. So, lots of fun twists and turns in this episode of Columbo. I highly recommend it. If you're a fan of Poker Face, you're going to like this one. Have fun. And I'm already looking forward to next week's episode. Bye-bye.
That was incredible.
Yeah.
Thanks, Paul.
Nailed the episode. I especially love that you took the time to look for one where they accidentally killed somebody else and it had a car involved. And also, yeah, your voice is dreamy. And I hope you call in again every time.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, this is a voice that we needed to hear. I'm so glad that Paul called in instead of writing in this week.
Paul, do you have a podcast? Tell us your podcast so we can listen. And speaking of podcasters, Jade called in. She is super busy with her play, but she took the time in between set and takes or whatever performances maybe to watch the episode, I think twice. She recorded her call from a theater closet. I actually haven't listened yet, but that's totally dedication. She also sent me a message after she sent her recording being like, God damn it, I got the guy's name wrong. She's calling him Kyle because in IMDb it says Kyle instead of Keith. And then she went back and double checked after she called. So she was kind of frustrated about that. But if you hear her talking about Kyle, she means Keith. So here goes.
Hey guys, it's me. And although it pains me not to be there, I'm very excited to hear what you guys have to say about this episode because race car driving is definitely not my area of expertise or interest. So I know that listening to a podcast about the episode will probably make me like appreciate it more. So it's not that I disliked the episode at all, but it's definitely my least favorite if I had to pick one. And that's weird to say because there's still so much good stuff. So I'll start with my moment to die for. When Kyle confessed to sabotaging the car, oh my God, I was not expecting that at all. My heart just broke for him too. Tim Nelson seriously did such a great job this episode. I wish he had more to do because every time I see him in something, I really love his performance. The man just has such a beautiful humanity. He's a great actor, and I can just tell he's a really good person. But the rest of this episode was so tight and efficient, I feel like I blinked and it was over. And it's weird there was no murder this week, but definitely the most attempts at murder, including attempted murder on Charlie herself. Wah. But this episode was so great for Charlie. She was so featured, and all of her talents were definitely at their peak. It was like Charlie in top form, you know, especially since she was able to resist Davis, who is played by literally the prettiest man alive. I don't know if that's just me, but I was waiting for an episode where Charlie was like attracted to the villain. I think, you know, we all are pretty attracted to this man. Charles Melton is like the prettiest human in existence. Okay, this man, I don't know any other way to describe his face. It's just so pretty. Anyway, when I discovered that Katie was in that car, I got like fucking chills. I was like, holy shit, he's so evil. And, you know, all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, this guy is so clever. The way that he like never actually had to lie about the car sabotage, he was able to kind of talk to Charlie without ever actually lying. He was very careful and very quick on his feet. I was like, you don't have to think of this at all, you know, about how you're going to phrase things at all. You're just talking like normal. And it was very clever. And I loved how Charlie learned something this time from the killer or the villain, and used it against him. You know, the trust the car thing, that was really cool at the end. And I really love how, okay, I know nothing about racing, but they definitely conveyed to me how important it is to be calm when you're racing and how bad nerves can fuck you all over when you're a race car driver. And just Charlie getting into his head and making his hand shake at the end, you know, Davis, you know, he it's like he knows that soon he's going to lose it. He's going to, you know, be injured or lose his sponsorship because she just psyched him out right before a big race. And that was really effective, the way that that was done, even though he didn't really get his comeuppance. Like, he's going to get it very soon. Something that really surprised me was that seatbelts are not inspected before each race. I was like, really? He was like, they're complicated as hell. And I'm like, really? I just never would have guessed that. And they said they went through the car with a fine-tooth comb, but no, seatbelts, oh, God forbid we'd check the seatbelt. I was like very surprised to hear that. I'm like, damn, racing is, it's a dangerous freaking sport. So you guys are going to have a very short, hilarious bullshit segment because this was definitely not the funniest episode. There were, you know, a couple of laughs, but there were some really great lines. Like, karma is like some kind of consequence. I agree. Karma is a consequence. That was really funny. And, oh God, when Kyle said, I lost my flow mid-season, I can't get out of my head. I hear drivers start your engines, and all I can think is there's someone out there who's better than me. I've lost the damn race before they even dropped the green flag. That was, oh, that was so great. Tim Nelson, he's so relatable, you know? He really got me there. I was like, man, I can relate to exactly what you're feeling right now. It was great. And then a funny one was, you can cancer dog him. Well, I'm regretting settling on that metaphor, but yes, I can cancer dog him. And I really loved when Charlie said, you tried to kill a person, you psycho. And for what? Driving a car around in a circle? Really? God damn, get him. And I have a kind of a cool trivia fact. There was an episode of Columbo called Etude in Black with John Cassavetes, and it's Ryan Johnson has said it's one of his favorite episodes. And I just realized that the house from Benson is the house in that episode. So I was like, oh, another Columbo poker face crossover. Nifty. So, okay, I can't wait to hear the episode this week, and I miss you guys, and I wish I was there, but I will see you next week. Okay, bye.
Bye, Jade.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
That's great. Since she can talk about how pretty the man was, I want to say in my third watch, Natasha Lyonne has a great set of legs.
Yeah, that's right. Really, I noticed that myself.
A lot in this episode.
Yep. Sometimes it was just all legs.
Yeah, like when she showed up at Keith's garage and they showed her from the back and it was like legs, miniskirt. Mm-hmm. And I was like, have we seen her dressed like this before? I don't think so. Like, is she trying to flirt with him? But then she was wearing the outfit for the rest of the episode. So maybe it was just hot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy who, the pretty guy, he's on Riverdale. He plays one of the main characters on Riverdale, but I've never watched that show.
Of course he is.
Yeah. He's, you know, he's a hot young guy, so he's on Riverdale.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for calling in and writing, everybody, as usual. We totally appreciate it. Thank you, Steve, for coming on and guesting with us. Good to talk to you.
It's been so great getting to know you, Steve. I hope that you will come back.
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever.
And for the rest of you out there, as always, if you want to write in or leave us a message or ask a question or point something out, you can find all of our contact information at podcastica.com.
Next time, we'll be covering episode 8 of Poker Face, The Orpheus Syndrome. Well, I guess now we can officially say season 1, episode 8 of Poker Face, The Orpheus Syndrome, directed by Natasha Lyonne, written by Natasha Lyonne and Alice Ju, who wrote Jason's favorite episode, which is The Night Shift. I think that might be my favorite, although the meat one was pretty good, too. So
it was.
And I like the retirement home one, too, a lot.
Yeah.
Those three
of
the seven we've seen, I feel. Well, but then I think Jade might say the play, you know.
The theater one, yeah.
Some damn good stuff in there. I still think two might be my favorite, but yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be hard for me to pick.
Well, that's it for this episode. Again, thanks everybody for listening.
Oh, and Steve Brown?
We know what you did, you psycho.
Love it.